It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Common Cause Pennsylvania was in the middle of several lawsuits in the last several weeks involving the vote-by-mail process and the Trump campaign's efforts to completely overturn Pennsylvania's election results. Our guest now is the new executive director, Khalif Ali. Welcome to the Confluence.
Thank you, Kevin. Glad to be here.
You are joining the organization at a time of, well, how would you describe it? Victory in the legal challenges, relief, vindication, something else?
I don't even look at it as anything really special per se. I think we're clearly in the mode of our mission. And we have been successful in fulfilling that mission.
But it's not the day-to-day same old, is it?
So no, it's clearly not typical. Common Cause is focused and committed on being very vigilant with regard to the integrity of our democracy. We want to make sure that the citizens or the people of Pennsylvania are able to practice democracy without any barriers, without any hesitation, and with full confidence. Mm-hmm. So this year, we felt like we needed to be a little bit more vigilant because of everything that's going on with the lawsuits and the challenges to the certification of President-elect Joe Biden as president.
Mm-hmm. Prior to your appointment, which was effective November 17th, you did work with Common Cause, I understand. Were you involved at all in the court cases leading up to Election Day and challenges by President Trump since then?
No, I have been working with Common Cause actually on the congressional redistricting that went to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court and was successful and got the districts redrawn for U.S. Congress for Pennsylvania. And we have a much fairer distribution of the congressional delegation that we send to Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. It reflects our voters. You know, there's roughly 50-50 in terms of Democratic and Republican registered voters in Pennsylvania. And we have a delegation that is 9 and 9 Republicans and 9 Democrats. So we know that when we are vigilant with regard to democracy, that we get the results that show the people of Pennsylvania that their votes count and is more accurately representative of who they are.
And prior to that redistricting decision by the state Supreme Court, it was 13 for Republicans and 5 Democratic seats.
Exactly. Yes.
You worked with Common Cause on the redistricting, which took effect with the 2018 midterm elections. But yes. What interested you in wanting to not just work with the organization, but for the organization?
I'm just a believer in democracy. I believe that is the best political system for a country that espouses freedom and liberty. But I do think that any democracy, that would include ours, is a work in progress. So it's not something that is immediately, just because it's a democracy, it works. It took over 100 years before we permitted women to be able to vote. And it took 150 years before we decided you shouldn't be discriminated against based on race, mm-hmm. ethnicity, religion, or anything else. So that tells me that all democracies are a work in progress.
Your organization's mission is, quote, defending and fighting for the tenets of democracy, end quote. I think it's accurate to say that this election season has been divisive for our country. Do you believe democracy has been under attack in our nation?
I do. What we're seeing is, whether it's our publicly elected officials or other citizens in this country are dissatisfied with the results of a democratic process. We see an uprising and a challenge of that process to a point where we're actually hearing people say that democracy is almost a nuisance in many cases to accomplish what they need to accomplish. So that makes our job that much more important because it's not a nuisance. It's what makes us one of the best countries in the world is the continuing development of our democracy and the vigilance of the progress that's been made in that democracy.
What are some of the acts of maybe voter suppression that you saw during the general election, and what would you want to do to resolve that?
Well, even before we get to the voter suppression, we need to talk about the process itself in terms of training poll workers, ensuring that they're prepared to work and totally understand the functions that are associated with their position so that they can fully help the voter and guide the voter through the process of submitting a ballot.
Well, let me follow up on that point then.
Okay, sure.
And how do you make sure that the poll workers are well trained and able to guide the voters without what some would say influencing the voters?
Great point. We know what the training is. We know how it is, and we can determine whether or not it's there's undue influence related to that's built into the training. But in terms of the nature of the training, we have to make it mandatory for everyone who's involved to properly prepare those individuals to work in those polling stations.
Can you tell us some acts of voter suppression that you saw and you would like to resolve for future contests?
One of the more non-concrete ways of doing voter suppression is to spread disinformation about the process of voting. I think that's our biggest barrier to actual participation. When you sort of erode the confidence that voters have in the system of submitting ballots and submitting votes, claiming that voting by mail is not a legitimate way of submitting ballots and that it's fraught with corruption and your ballots may not be counted, all of these various things sort of put a lot of doubt in the mind of voters.
You're a member of the City of Pittsburgh Ethics Commission, previously a director of public policy and advocacy for the Pittsburgh Foundation. How have those experiences influenced what you might want to accomplish at Common Cause?
Recently, stepped off the Ethics Commission, but I think the Ethics Commission is really an excellent way of viewing a standard of behavior that you would expect from your elected official. So I'll give you an example. So as an elected official, you're supposed to report all donations related to, your election or re-election campaign. All of these things are very transparent and they act in a way that really informs the people of Pittsburgh and it makes clear who may or may not be somewhat influencing. The Ethics Commission is all about making sure that the democratic process is untainted and and it's very transparent. And so that is a huge lesson for me. I'm all about transparency. With the Pittsburgh Foundation, it really helped me understand the importance of coalition building and working with other organizations who have very similar missions and vision statements to yours. And it helped, and it was sort of like a general reminder that none of us can do this by ourselves.
Looking ahead to the 2021 state legislative session, are you concerned about any efforts to roll back provisions in Act 77, which allowed for the expanded no excuse mail-in balloting that was so successful in terms of numbers of people participating that way? Are you concerned about any possible changes to that by the legislature?
We had a record turnout in Pennsylvania. I don't think that was by accident. When we remove any of the barriers that are associated with the people of Pennsylvania participating in the democratic process, they've shown that that is something that is motivating, that's inspirational, and that will push them to participate. We have to continue to keep in mind that we don't want anything standing in the way of our citizens participating in the democratic process. And so, in response to your question, yes, we're going to be pushing to make sure that those changes are kept in place because it's shown that people are open to participating if this is something that is not a huge hurdle for them.
Finally, the Republican-controlled legislature will draw the congressional lines for 2022 after the census data is released. In a 5-4 decision, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that partisan redistricting is a political question not reviewable by federal courts. As we mentioned previously, you worked with Common Cause on redistricting for the 2018 midterm elections. Do you expect to be back in court? Maybe it's the Pennsylvania Supreme Court again next year over congressional line drawing.
We don't anticipate being back in court, but we're fully prepared to be in court if necessary. I don't know that the Republican-controlled General Assembly will want to go back to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. So maybe we won't have to.
Khalif Ali is the new executive director of Common Cause Pennsylvania. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Governor Tom Wolf and other top officials Monday pleaded with the public to stay home, citing surging coronavirus infections and hospitalizations in Pennsylvania. He says that if the virus's spread doesn't slow, it will overwhelm hospitals to the breaking point.
There are fewer resources to go around for the sickest Pennsylvanians, whatever the sickness that you're suffering. Already we're hearing stories about hospitals forced to divert patients to other treatment facilities because of full emergency rooms and overwhelming needs.
Despite his dire warnings, the governor has yet to order another shutdown like what was seen in the spring. 90.5 WESA's Sarah Bowden reports on this fraught situation.
Hope Campbell of Plum Borough says a shutdown should have been issued months ago, well before the state began regularly reporting more than 10,000 new cases a day.
If you can't go eat at a table in a restaurant because they're closed, you can't do that. And that's going to limit spread if people just can't go places.
Campbell knows a shutdown won't completely stop the virus's spread, but she believes it would help. After all, hospitals might soon need to start rationing medical care.
And you're still doing nothing except asking people to do the right thing, that's not going to work. I mean, if you see that it's going to get more out of control, do something about it.
One reason some government officials give for not taking more aggressive action is it's believed that the virus spreads mostly in private settings, so closing public spaces seems counterproductive.
Parties break out on the weekends or after work, so it is frustrating. People know what to do, but sometimes let their guard down.
Allegheny County Executive Rich Fitzgerald told WESA's The Confluence that some gatherings brazenly flout public health recommendations. For example, parents at the Plumborough School District recently organized an unauthorized homecoming dance, which was held in neighboring Westmoreland County at Five Pines Barn, a popular wedding venue.
And it's disappointing that these irresponsible parents, they went, you know, they snuck across county lines, took 150 people with them, and now they're basically covering up what they've done.
Fitzgerald was referring to the fact that initially the dance's organizers refused to share the invite list with contact tracers. They eventually did, and at least two cases were identified. But if there was a shutdown, Five Pines Barn wouldn't have been able to host the dance in the first place. The same can be said for bars and restaurants. Public health officials plead with people to avoid these venues, yet they remain open. Even if most of the spread is happening at private gatherings, University of Pittsburgh social epidemiologist Christina Mayer thinks a shutdown is necessary.
Enough of those people then go to the casinos and the bars and restaurants, right, and then spread it, and then go to other small home gatherings.
The governor says a shutdown is a blunt instrument, and his administration is trying to take a more targeted approach than what was done during the first wave.
We didn't know much at all about COVID-19. We didn't know what we needed to do to treat it, and we really were not even clear on things as fundamental as masking at that point.
But now, thousands of people in the U.S. die every day. Our medical system is careening towards disaster. Mayer says allowing society to function like normal sends the message that everything is okay when it's not.
We sort of need to close what we can close, you know, control what we can control.
Mayer acknowledges that a shutdown comes with economic drawbacks. Dr. Deborah Bogan, director of Allegheny County's Health Department, discussed this at a news conference last week.
Closing businesses now comes with more pain than in March. Gone is the financial assistance to businesses and the extra unemployment to laid off workers.
Also, the federal moratorium on evictions expires at the end of this month, though some are occurring already. Housing and food security are also public health issues, which disproportionately affect people of color who are already more likely to become severely ill or die from COVID-19. Another public health risk created by a shutdown is that by closing the places where people can more safely socialize, it might actually increase the virus's spread. Dr. Amish Adalja is an infectious disease physician at Johns Hopkins University's Center for Health Security.
You're not going to be nailing people into their houses.
It's similar to abstinence-only sex education or the war on drugs. People still engage in illicit activities, but often at greater risk.
I think of stay-at-home orders as abstinence-only approaches. We know that that's going to have ancillary consequences on people's behavior that are going to then not be so visible to public health.
Examples of COVID-19 harm reduction? Wearing a mask while shopping, visiting with friends outside, and only permitting outdoor seating at bars and restaurants. Pennsylvania has not taken this last action. But harm reduction with the coronavirus is difficult, partly due to a lack of testing. Adalja says figuring out if you have the virus should be as easy as taking an at-home pregnancy test.
To me, the original sin of this pandemic is the fact that we cannot test people as frequently as we need to, and people cannot know their status, and we simply can't answer this basic question of who is infected and who is not 11 months into this.
Setting aside the public health fallout, it's unclear how much support the governor would have among local municipalities to carry out a shutdown.
Anything like that would require local enforcement. And we've seen that localities across the board, particularly run by Republicans, have resisted those efforts.
J.J. Abbott was Governor Tom Wolf's press secretary up until March of this year.
And what we've dealt with over the last 7-8 months is a tremendous misinformation and disinformation campaign, particularly driven by the president.
While some local officials object to mitigation efforts on philosophical grounds, believing mask mandates or restrictions on businesses are government overreach, others argue that police departments aren't qualified or able to enforce these measures. Beaver County District Attorney David Lozier says this even includes issuing civil citations.
That's not what they're trained for. And when most departments only have one officer on duty during a daylight shift, we don't have the resources.
Back during the spring shutdown, Lozier told police departments in Beaver County to not enforce the governor's forced closure of non-essential businesses. He says deciding whether a business is essential is a constitutional question.
You could have 500 people in a Walmart, but you couldn't have 5 people in a small Hallmark shop selling the same things.
A prosecutor, says Lozier, should only enforce laws that are predictable and well-defined. Towards the end of his Monday press conference, Governor Wolf hinted at the possibility of additional mitigation efforts.
We'll be continuing to look at this and in the next few days have something to share with you.
Some mitigation measures do remain in place, such as limits on crowd sizes, the requirement that restaurants serve food with alcohol, and the universal masking mandate. But it seems that public officials have largely decided to stay their current course of action, which is to beg people to stay home, scold members of the public who don't comply, and wait for a vaccine. I'm Sarah Bowden, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Lara Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.